and gentlemen, at this time, the National Broadcasting Company is pleased to present another prayer in the busy schedule of this historic day. We are pleased to introduce Mr. DeWitt A. Davidson, past first reader of the Second Church Christ Scientist in New York. Mr. Davidson.
Pray for the prosperity of our country and for her victory under arms, that justice, mercy, and peace continue to characterize her government, and that they shall rule all nations. Pray that the divine presence may still guide and bless our chief magistrate, those associated with his executive trust, and our national judiciary. Give to our Congress wisdom and uphold our nation with the right arm of his righteousness. In your peaceful homes, remember our brave soldiers, whether in camp or in battle. Oh, may their love of country and their faithful service thereof be unto them life preservers. May our Father, Mother God, who in times past hath spread for us a table in the wilderness and in the midst of our enemies, establish us in the most holy faith, plant our feet firmly on truth, the rock of Christ, the substance of things hoped for, and fill us with the life and understanding of God and goodwill towards men.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard a prayer read by Mr. DeWitt A. Davidson, past first reader of Second Church Christ Scientist in New York.
This is Don Goddard in the NBC newsroom in New York with the latest summary of the invasion news. At this hour, there is every evidence that the armies of General Eisenhower, with the support of the Allied fleets and air forces, actually are expanding their beachheads on the coasts of France. From present descriptions, that beachhead, or that series of beachheads, is roughly a crescent of land swinging from the port of Cherbourg eastward to the port of Le Havre, around the estuary of the River Seine, where it joins the waters of the Channel. At last reports, this beachhead was about 10 miles wide at its widest place at the spot of greatest attack, the city of Caen. There are German reports that the Allies also have landed on the Channel Islands of Jersey and Guernsey, but those reports are unconfirmed at this hour. An earlier Swedish report said that our points of landing numbered about 12. This has not been confirmed either. The Germans, just heard by our monitors at NBC, also say that they expect new landings on the island of St. Malo, another of the Channel Islands. And the latest report from our reconnaissance flyers, who already are piecing together several thousand pictures of the beachheads and producing evidence that our armies have secured their positions, are now in. And a bulletin at an Allied air base in England says that many Allied assault troops are now beyond the initial danger zone of total exposure in France. That also is a report from our reconnaissance flyers. The soldiers of the Allied nations have been on the shores of Europe for 12 hours and more now, and the Germans are beginning to come back with counter-assault at our beachheads. Just how heavy or how effective those counter-blows are is not clear. The Germans, in one breath, speak of meeting our armies along the whole 70 miles of French coastline, where we've secured ourselves. They speak of dealing effectively with our parachutists, and they say they've taken many of them prisoner. They also say their big coastal guns have come into play, and their fleets of fast E-boats and destroyers are in the Seine estuaries battling our navies. They claim they have sunk a cruiser and several landing barges. They are claiming no air successes to this point, however. They make these claims when at last they announced, after 9 hours of double talk on their domestic radio programs to the German people, that this really looked like the invasion the Allies had been talking about. And then they began to explain how many ships and planes and men we'd thrown into the fray. They even admitted that we'd penetrated rather far inland, and a distance of 10 or 12 miles, they said. The Nazis undoubtedly are readying their counterattacks. They may actually have launched some, but thus far, considering the magnitude of their operations, the number of men and the 4,000 ships and 11,000 Allied planes involved, our casualties have been comparatively light. That is an official statement. And in most places, our men came ashore against little opposition, and the German Air Force was practically absent. In fact, our reconnaissance flyers report that we not only have secured our beachheads, but that some of our advanced spearheads are now penetrating southward, and they say, on the run. If they are, they're headed in the general direction of Paris, which lies only 125 miles to the south. A bulletin from London. German fighter planes have begun offering opposition now to Allied invasion forces. That's just in. Returning Allied pilots report numerous dogfights between Allied Typhoons and German Messerschmitts and Fokker Wulfs in the southeast battle area of the invasion coast. One of the contributing factors in our initial successes there on the northern shores of France undoubtedly is our overwhelming superiority in air power. Air power to the smothering point. 11,000 planes in action today as our troops swept ashore. So Prime Minister Churchill told the House of Commons this morning. And that add that to the accumulated death and destruction from thousands upon thousands of sorties of our air blitz to date. Also, that concentrated attack, the heaviest yet in a limited area that the RAF laid on the path to invasion that our armies were to take a few hours after last night. Add another 1,000-plane attack by American heavy bombers along that coast this morning, and then add the hundreds to come. A bulletin from Stockholm, a Berlin dispatch of the Scandinavian Telegraph Bureau, reports heavy fighting on both sides of Caen today, and says additional Allied invasion forces have been seen off Caen and off Cherbourg, undoubtedly reinforcements now being brought up. Yes, the Germans will react militarily, as they did at Anzio, bitterly and with strength. Few observers doubt that at this hour. But we're ashore on the continent of Europe, and we shall stay there. There seems little doubt of that, either. One German reaction is that of Hitler himself. He was reported to be rushing to France today to try his intuition against the masterly planning of General Eisenhower and his commanders. Another bulletin, Washington, Admiral Royal E. Ingersoll has just now officially revealed that U.S. battleships, cruisers, and destroyers of the United States Navy are participating in the invasion of Western Europe. The news of the invasion in Western Europe gave an added impetus to our armies in Italy. Rome went wild with jubilation. A dispatch just received from Rome says that Allied troops have smashed 5 miles north of the Tiber River now. 16 miles east of Rome, Allied troops have captured a spot known as Tivoli Junction. To the west of the Holy City, near the mouth of the Tiber, American forces have cut off and captured a force of 2,000 Germans. And there are more reports that the enemy is bewildered, demoralized in their mad scramble northward. The armies of General Alexander are sweeping ahead along a front of 70 miles there in Italy, and well north of Rome now. A late report from Washington, Soviet Ambassador Andrei A. Gromyko hails the opening of what he calls the Second Front, which Russia has so long demanded, and he predicts a speedy and a complete victory. In the first official Soviet reaction to the invasion news, the ambassador declares that he is confident that the combined blows of the powerful Allied coalition will ensure a speedy and complete victory over the enemy. The news of the invasion, he says, is good and encouraging. Gromyko conveys the wishes of the Soviet people for all successes to our allies in this most important military undertaking, which is speeding up our common victory over the mortal enemy of mankind, Hitlerite Germany. And London war authorities have heard this morning that Russia herself is now about ready to strike the Germans in great strength from the east and will launch major offensives before this week is over. And President Roosevelt has just summoned the top leaders, the chiefs of his army and the navy and the air forces for a conference at the White House. And this afternoon he will meet the newsmen for his regular Tuesday afternoon news conference. And I understand that we are now to have a special broadcast from Rome, a special broadcast which will be heard from the city of London, rather, from our headquarters in London. If London is ready, we will call them in. They will be ready in just a moment. We understand that one of our reporters is waiting over there, having just conferred with top leaders of the Allied armies. Go ahead, London.
This is W.W. Chaplin in London. The first post-invasion press conference has just been held in a long, narrow, bowling alley sort of room in the Ministry of Information. And do you know one startling thing that has come out of that conference?
Well, sir?
The invasion of Europe from the West was originally planned for yesterday, not today. But
the weather prophets
came along and shook their fingers and wagged their heads, and they said, no, no, you can't have your invasion. Then, because the weather is going to be just, awful. So,
the generals took that dictum and they said, okay, they'd put off the invasion. The greatest amphibious operation in history, at least one day. And then what happened?
Well, the next day,
and that was yesterday, the weather was worse than ever.
But those old weather prophets came barging out again and said, sure, it looks pretty terrible right now, but it's going to clear up fine. So the generals decided to let her go for last night, or rather early this morning. And sure enough, the weather cleared up and over they went. At this first press conference, sponsored by SHAFE, which means Supreme Headquarters Allied Expeditionary Force, there were representatives of air, sea, and land forces. Nationality didn't count, as it doesn't count in the actual military operations. Some of the men talking today were American and some were British, just as some of the men doing the fighting are American and some are British. And now, back to the newsroom in New York.
Thank you, Bill Chaplin. That was Bill Chaplin from our headquarters in London telling us the latest invasion news in London. As he told you, the Allied landings in France were postponed 24 hours due to bad weather. That was learned today at Allied headquarters, and Bill has just been up there talking with the Supreme Commanders. And back here in this country, from every city and town in America today, the news is almost the same. There is relief that the tension is over, that D-Day has come at last, and the first reports are almost unbelievably favorable. But that relief is a sober relief, and if any joy is felt, it's tempered by the knowledge that American boys must die to liberate Europe in this greatest invasion which the world has ever seen. That's the temper and the spirit of America today as we feel it here in the newsroom, as we get it from the dispatches which are pouring in by the thousands of words here at NBC, describing the reaction in all communities, big and little, of the United States and of the world. But at least the waiting is over, and Americans have looked at each other and said, yes, this is it. And they could take some comfort from the words of Winston Churchill, that grand old phrase maker this morning, who told the House of Commons this morning that things were going according to plan, and he added, what a plan that is. Said Churchill, citing the 4,000 ships and 11,000 planes and our beachheads already driven into the Normandy Peninsula of France, yes, what a plan. And we could take comfort, too, from the knowledge that President Roosevelt sat up all night behind blacked-out windows of the White House, in constant touch with the situation, knowing when every naval vessel was launched, when every amphibious landing barge sheered onto the beaches of France. Americans could take comfort in the fact that the president was praying along with them, and that he was composing a prayer, too. As soon as he finished his radio address last night, which he will ask Americans to intone with him when he speaks again tonight on the radio at 10 o'clock Eastern wartime. The president's secretary, Stephen Early, told this story to reporters in Washington this morning. He knew when the first barges started across the channel, and he knew when they landed. He knew of other operations in just as great detail. And that prayer, which President Roosevelt has composed, has been released for publication this afternoon in order that the public may be familiar with it and be able to join in with the president. And in part, it goes like this. My fellow Americans, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join me in prayer. Almighty God, our sons, pride of the nation, this day have set up a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. Lead them straight and true. Give strength to their arms, stoutness to their hearts, steadfastness to their faith. They will need thy blessings. Their road will be long and hard. And that is the NBC Newsroom in New York. This is Don Goddard speaking for NBC.
We pause briefly for station identification.
WEAF, New York.